Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff back in the saddle after a week off and Julie Calamine.
Good morning, Phil. I hope you had a good week away.
It was wonderful. I was over in Montana where fall was really coming into its own. The aspen, the birch, the larch are all turning bright yellow at 8,000 feet. There's a dusting of snow and the drive back up the Clark Fork Valley is always inspiring.
That is beautiful. I saw a bear the last time I drove that, which wasn't that long ago. Yeah, beautiful fall colors coming along and kind of an okay weekend, really. I got out and did a little bit of hiking because we're still having some hiking weather and just enjoyed that fall, fresh feeling of fall in the air. How about you?
Well, I saw a lot of deer and managed not to injure any of them, which is good. We don't want to give too much more business to our guests today.
That's right, which leads us into, we won't introduce our speakers quite yet, but just so that you know, our guests this morning are going to be Dory McIsaac and Kathleen Bradley, and they are from the Mystic Farm Rescue in Sagal. Before that, we'll go to weather, though.
Yeah, let's look at the weather. So today we have showers. It doesn't say maybe showers. It says showers, and it was raining on the way in. Then you have a chance of showers tonight. The high will be 52 degrees, and tonight's low will be in the high 30s. Tomorrow, we have rain and patchy fog again with a little bit lower high in the mid-40s, which is about back to the normal range. And it's going to continue like that for the week. Pretty much likely rain, highs in the high 40s, low 50s, overnight and around the 40-degree mark.
Well, I guess our drought is over, and on we go into fall. So we've got a really, really interesting couple of guests here this morning. I'd like to introduce you. Dory McIsaac, you're the executive director of Mystic Farm Rescue. Good morning, Dory.
Good morning.
And Kathleen Bradley, you are a member of the board for Mystic Farm Rescue. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning.
So nice to have you here this morning. So we're going to ask you to tell us a little bit about yourselves and about the organization, but let's start with knowing more about you all. Dory, tell us about how you came to be where you are today. Let's start at the beginning, anything relevant? And
oh, I was born.
Yeah, no. Yeah, not that much.
Yeah. Okay. We moved down here, down to Idaho, actually down southeast Idaho in 2002 from Alaska. And I was involved up there with primarily moose rescue type stuff. Up in Alaska, there was plenty of money for such things as rescue, as wildlife rescue. But it wasn't allowed. You couldn't get licensed through the Fish and Game or anything like that. But there was a lot of corporations and things that were willing to put the money there. So it was kind of the opposite of what I found here. So I came down here. Long story short, it's probably like 2003, I'm thinking, down in Pocatello area. I heard on the radio there were two baby moose. It was one baby moose. I'm getting old. Had fallen in a window well, and they didn't know what to do with it. And I thought, well, I have the knowledge, and, you know, I called them and said I could help you with this. So they said, oh, we already took it to a facility, and it ended up dying. But I said, okay, if anything ever happens in the future. So cut to the next year, and they called, and that's when they had a set of twins. Baby moose, and then they brought me a mule deer, and then another, and it just kind of grew from there. I hadn't really planned on setting up a rescue. It just kind of fell in my lap.
So you haven't, like, your whole life hasn't been, I want to be a wildlife rescuer.
Well, not really. I mean, not specifically, but I'm an animal junkie. I mean, of all sorts.
But it sounds like you might have moved to Idaho because of the opportunity to do that here, or was that just coincidental?
It actually was just coincidental, yeah. But I have friends up in Alaska yet that are doing this and now can do this, can be certified and licensed and stuff. So it's evolved quite a bit since then, and we all keep in touch and, you know, the circle of rescue people. But no, I didn't move here specifically for that. But so I continued to do it and then thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I sure should be a nonprofit, a 501c3, so people could get tax write-offs with their donations. Not that there's a lot of that coming in at that time, but so I did. I went ahead in 2007, I think it was, we were officially 501c3.
Yeah, good.
And it's just grown from there. I moved here in 2010 up here to North Idaho, and the first weekend had two fawns come in. I had brought a couple of deer with and an elk with. And so
you moved with crazy. Deer and elk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was crazy.
So they kind of migrated north.
Yeah, it was a special case. But
yeah. Oh, so and then you arrived here, and we'll talk more about your facility presently. But let's hear from you, Kathleen. How did you come to be on the board?
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. My husband's from Pennsylvania. I am from Idaho. And it was time for us to move home. And so we came back here in 2012. And we actually got married when we first got out here. And we were headed down, believe it or not, to have titles transferred. And I happened to see a little deer on the side of the road. And so I went over and I picked it up and I put it in the back of the car because I could tell that there was something definitely wrong. And I went to the closest animal veterinarian clinic and asked if there was something somebody could do. And they introduced me to Dory, who proceeded to tell me that you're not supposed to pick up a fawn. And that's okay because I didn't know.
But in Kathleen's defense, you know, I tell everyone, you know, do not touch, don't pick them up. But in her defense, it was injured. It had been hit by a car and needed attention. So it was all good.
Yeah.
So what do you do with a fawn?
You call Dory.
Okay.
Well, she's not a Ghostbuster, Phil, but we can still call her.
That's right. Who are you going to call? I work with the fawns that are in good shape, if you will. You know, we do set broken legs. I was telling Julie earlier that my husband is a saint for supporting me doing all this, but he's also in the medical profession. He's a physician assistant, so he helps me set the legs, which is awesome.
Yeah, so that's a big job.
And it saves money, you know, from vet care. We've gotten it down to a science. When there's other problems that are, you know, more severe, I will take them to different veterinarians in the area. But over the years, I've gotten so that I know when it's time to just cut the losses, you know, if you will. You can't keep putting money into a wild animal, you know. So.
Well, that leads me to the question about really what is the mission when you're a wildlife rescue organization? We know it's to save animals, but you're telling us it's not to save all animals. So is there sort of an overriding principle, a mission that you work from in terms of, you know, which ones get to be saved and just exactly what animals? Because you don't save every animal either. Yeah. You don't work with like the raccoons or the mountain lions. You work with a rather specific group.
I get calls every day. Every day, year round, and in the summer, I sometimes get 20 calls a day that are not related to ungulates, which is what Misty Farm is about.
Yeah, well, tell us about that. Your whole big idea. What's the mission for Mystic Farms?
Well, the mission is to rescue, rehab, and release back into the wild injured and or orphaned, which is a kind of quotes around it. Fawns are ungulates, and to educate the community, as we do a school program type thing, but that's a whole nother thing. When I get the calls coming in, because we're on the internet and Facebook and everything as a wildlife rescue, and I think Mystic Farm is the first one that must pop up when people do a search, because I always get the calls on crows and squirrels and bats, and but I work closely with American Heritage Wildlife Rescue out in Clark Fork.
Sure.
Not work closely in that we work together, but I call her constantly and say, I referred this, or she'll call me and say, I got a call on a fawn, you know.
Yes, so, you need to coordinate.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And additionally, you're coordinating with American Heritage, but is there association with Fish and Game? Who are all the players in the wildlife rescue world?
Kind of back up how we do
this.
We have to be certified by Fish and Game, so meaning licensed is, you know, we have to get a permit, and the permit is good for 3 years. After 3 years, we reapply again. So that's basically all we need legally. But I think, you know, speaking for American Heritage as well, we have memberships, you know, in the National Wildlife Associations and the international, and keep up on things, try to go to conferences and things when we can.
So in the permitting process, is Fish and Game primarily looking at the facilities or training of the personnel? What are the things they're looking for?
Well, I don't know. To be honest, I wish I could answer that question with someone starting out new. I assume they would, make sure their facilities are up to par. I mean, I know they've joked before that mine's the Taj Mahal, so they don't, because I'm pretty neurotic. As far as training how to do it, I don't know how they would do that. They just knew that I had, years of it before I even applied, up here and in Southeast. So,
and it doesn't sound like you're a veterinarian, so they don't require that.
Actually, my degree is in social work counseling, primarily with kids and families. So.
So you can talk those little fawns through whatever's going on and they can get into the pens.
I do, yes.
Oh, good.
So is it the full range of ungulates, moose, elk?
It used to be more elk and deer, or elk and moose with the deer. We've gone to almost primarily fawns. We will take in moose and elk to stabilize, and I actually developed a database for Fish and Game so that there are places all around the United States that if there's a facility looking for, a male elk or something for breeding purposes or whatever, they can be taken there.
And what changed that you mainly do the young deer rather than everything? Is there a regulation that changed?
It's not, well, not really. I mean, it was the elk and the moose are a lot harder, a lot more expensive. Let's start there. The deer average about $400 to $500 per animal for the time they come in until they leave. Some more, of course, and some less, depending on vet care, whatever. Moose and elk, $3,200 per.
Oh, my.
Wow. Yeah, it can get pricey. Plus, they imprint. And for people who may not know what imprint, they get tamed, attached to people very, very easily. So they can be a nuisance. And it's really tough to keep them from, if you're bottle feeding, they're immediately so attached and they will go to other people, not just me. Whereas deer, they pretty much, I'm the mom and they'll stay away from other people, and it's easier. To be honest.
So to be clear for the listeners, the goal isn't to create a zoo where people come, but to release them back to the wild.
Absolutely. And
how long does that take? What's the usual turnaround time?
Well, the we'll just talk fawns.
Sure.
Just sake of discussion. The fawns are born usually the first week of June. There will be some earlier ones sometimes in May, into May. Sometimes later. I've had newborn fawns even in September, into September, but that's a whole nother story. But normally, the first week or so of June, I have one area there, like of a few days, where I'll get sometimes, four or five fawns in one day. So they all drop on the ground at that time. I take them in and start the bottle feeding, every 2 hours. And of course, more time between the bottles as we go. The goal is then I eventually, get them off the bottle and released. I do what's called a soft release. So the gates are open during the day. They come back at night for their bottle. That's usually in September. I lock the gates to keep the predators out. And then once I wean them off that last bottle, the gates are open 24/7 and they're on their own. So I don't just shove them out there. Some we transport too to different areas. It just depends.
Their release is generally from your facility directly out into the wild.
Some of them.
Do you transport some to other places?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Some of them are transported to other places, and that's where my husband really has been a huge help. Michael works. My husband is more of a support on my end, and so he is able to give more time with Dory. In capturing them, putting them into crates, and then taking them out and releasing them into the wild. That way, they're not all concentrated in one area, so they can kind of get a feel for the area and in different places.
And then I assess them as we go along. Which ones you can tell how they group up, and you'll have a real hardy one with kind of a little weaker one, but yet they group up. And and we take all of that into account.
So you're not waiting until an opportune time around hunting season to release those?
No. But, and, you know, I want to say, too, that, and I get this question all the time, you know, why you release some and then what about the hunters and what about this? Well, you know what, I don't do this to make pets, like you said. It's not a petting zoo. These aren't my babies. I don't allow, you know, people to come out and pet and feed and, you know, that type of thing. And it's just a part of nature, you know. It's just, it, if they grow up and they're a nice buck or a doe when it's doe season, that's part of it. They had a second chance.
Sure. Know? And that leads me to ask you a few more questions about just what are the reasons these little guys are needing rescue help? It doesn't sound like hunting's a big issue, but what are the reasons why they're coming into you? Let's go back to that.
Well, since I've started up here, I kind of want to pat ourselves on the back. I run around in my pickup that has a picture of a fawn on each door and the words around it that say, you know, don't be a fawn napper. That was a big problem for quite a while. I would talk to people when I first got here, and I swear, you know, 50% of the people I talked to would say, oh, we raised a fawn. We had one in our kitchen, and we had, you know, there was no place to take them. If they picked one up that was injured or picked one up that they thought was orphaned or whatever. So I started this campaign, Don't Be a Fawn Napper, and go into the schools and do the Do Not Touch program, because so many people, and it was just, you know, they were, it wasn't intentional. I mean, and it still isn't usually when it happens, but they see a fawn and nature tells them, it's just, you know, instinct to lay there, lay flat, and mom's out eating, and
yes,
you know, and for the first week or two,
and our impulse is to help anything that
absolutely,
we see lying,
you know,
still.
Even, you know, I know better, and it's, and I feel that.
And so the moms will often leave the fawns while they go and forage, so that's a normal thing to make it look like the fawn's been abandoned.
Exactly, and that's when people will, or, you know, pick them up, and then, you know, unfortunately, I get calls. And what I was going to say is that's getting less and less and less. I love that.
So you're a trained professional. How can you tell if a fawn's been abandoned or if mom's just out foraging? If you're called and you come to the scene, how can you tell? What things are you looking for?
Well, first of all, if I get called and they say I found a fawn and it was lying there, and I'll say, okay, describe where it was, what it's doing, what kind of shape it's in. And then I'll say, okay, here's what you do. Take it back, put it where you found it, and leave. Oh, but I touched it.
That's like, hard.
I know it's hard, but they'll say, but I touched it. And I'll say, it doesn't matter. Mama's instinct for her baby is so much stronger than the human, you know, the fear of the human smell. And besides, they smell humans all the time. They're in our yards eating, you know. But sometimes, unfortunately, the people will say, well, I really didn't have it an hour. I've had it a week. Well, then, of course, my assessment is, yeah, we need to take this baby, because you're not going to put it back out there when the mama's been gone a week and it's just coyote bait, you know. So that's how I get those. I never will take one when they just say I picked it up. I just absolutely refuse. We try to put it back. And what I'll do is, first I tell people, though, besides assessing what it looks like and how, you know, is how long has it been there? Well, it's been crying for 4 hours. No, I tell them 24 hours. Leave it for 24 hours. And that's hard.
So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. And this morning on The Morning Show, we have Kathleen and Dory from the Mystic Farm Rescue. And we're talking about their operation of taking in abandoned, orphaned, and injured fawns.
Right. And why don't you give us your contact info? We'll have it again. But for those listening, they might want to jot that down.
You want me to do that, Kelly? Okay. My phone number is everywhere, so I'll give that out. It's on my truck. It's on everything. It's 208-241-7081, and I always answer my phone. And people will tell you that. They call me at 3 in the morning. There's a fawn crying out my door, outside my door. You know? But I always answer. Our website, you can go to it. There is some kind of pertinent information and some really cool pictures, but the website is so outdated. So I'll put that out there. If there's anyone that is not a techno weenie like me and that would like to help with that website, it's old. I don't know how to put anything on it or take anything off. but it's paid for.
That is
Mystic, and Mystic is with a Y, M-Y-S-T-I-C, mystic-farm.com. But our best source to follow us is on Facebook. I try to update that depending on how busy I am with the fawns, or like now we're so busy with the putting together our yearly fundraiser and stuff. I try to update it daily or at least a couple times a week and put videos of the fawns and just what's going on. And that is facebook.com/Mystic Farm Wildlife Rescue.
Okay, and you've given us some contact information and told us a little bit about your organization, that you could use more help. And you're a nonprofit just like we are here at KRFY. And so I'm guessing that there's always more work to be done than there are people. Tell us about your organization. Volunteers, how many people, anyone paid, and how are you funded? So that's a bunch of questions. Let's start with that.
I'm going to let Kathleen take over some of that.
Start with your organization. Absolutely. So everybody is a volunteer, Dory included. There are no salaries whatsoever. So anything that is coming into donation-wise is all going directly to the fawns. Primarily, we have one major event a year that we try to generate income, and that is usually held in January. We've been doing that now for the last 3 or 4 years, having the auction. And
five years?
It's been quite a while. How time flies when we're having fun. And quite honestly, it is a tremendous opportunity. We have it at Laughing Dog. And this year it's going to be on January 21st, I believe.
At 2 o'clock.
At 2 o'clock. It is a lot of fun. We have auction items. We have silent auctions. We have... what do they call a general raffle? We've had some really, really good results with that. That gets us enough funding to start. Quite honestly, we have a lot of donations coming from various places as far as food donations, those types of things, which are really important.
Very important.
And we have people that really help us, especially during the summer, for that. We do always need additional funds during the summer, especially trying to get milk and that type of thing to help with the fawns. So Dory also has various sites, and quite honestly, if you go to Amazon and have the What's Smile.
Yeah, there's a number of things. There's iGive.com. You can go on iGive.com and search, just put in Mystic Farm and select that as your charity. And so every time you shop at a place online that's part of the iGive program, we get a percentage. Doesn't cost the shopper anything. And the same with if you shop on Amazon, don't just shop Amazon. Do Amazon Smile. Or I think you have to type it in, Smile Amazon. But and select Mystic Farm Wildlife Rescue. And, you know, some like Amazon is only 0.6%. It's not much at all, but it adds up. And Fred Meyer, you can do that through Fred Meyer if you have a Fred Meyer card and pick Mystic Farm.
Okay, so kind of easy ways to help out.
It's not a lot, but it helps.
So do you have other staff, volunteer staff that help you out? Or
we have volunteers throughout the year. Walmart has been phenomenal as far as sending people to help with that. We've had some school students that have come along and helped as well. Dory was having previously an intern that would come up and work during the summer. This year, because of the transition of location, we did not have that, so she pretty much had to do that on her own. But it's quite honestly a lot of people that have heard about the organization, people like me that stumbled across the organization, that we all try to get involved because we all enjoy it.
So let's go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, a lot of people... the volunteers really are aplenty out there, but I'll get a call and they say, "We want to volunteer." And I'll say, "Awesome, we need to tear down these fence panels and we need to do this." "No, I want to bottle feed the fawns." And I can't,
I can't do that.
Exactly. Who wouldn't want to do that? But it defeats the whole purpose, because then they're imprinted and they're they're puppies, and we don't want that. So a lot of people get very disappointed when they can't do that.
Yeah.
I sit on the board, and I don't even get to bottle feed. Just want to let you know that. It's nothing against anybody. It's just a matter of making sure that the animals are not imprinted so that they can adjust back into the wild. So when we're doing volunteer things, it's going to be donating time to be able to come up with the funds to be able to feed them and move forward.
A lot of running for me, running to get produce and things like
that. And some of the other things that Dory does is that she makes candles. And so she sells candles, and she does things all through the year trying to come up with the funds to be able to
fund
this. And
grant write. I'm the grant writing queen.
Yeah, small nonprofits, it's a one-stop shop.
Absolutely.
You bet.
So Kathleen, tell us more about your involvement. What drew you in? How you got interested?
So once I found the fawn on the side of the road, I actually had was down at this animal clinic. They put Dory on the phone. She came down, and we took the fawn back, and I was curious. So I had called her, and I'm one of those that really believes in things are connected. And so I called and I'd check on the animal, and she happened to have an auction going on that year. So my husband and I went down for that, and we had just relocated, as I said, from Pennsylvania. And so as we were sitting there talking about it, and the fawn did grow up and was released and did very well, as far as we all know. But we decided that we didn't have any connections here. And again, I believe completely in connectedness. So therefore, I said, I think that we need to do something here. And my husband said, yeah, absolutely. So we joined the board and started working. And quite honestly, neither one of us were working at the time, so we had a little more time to be able to give. It was very, very worthwhile, and we enjoy it. We've been doing it, like Dory said, 5 years now. So
that's great. That's great to hear.
I was going to add, too, Kathleen mentioned the intern in the summer. The intern, and again, she mentioned this year I didn't have one because I was living in the barn with the fawns for almost 3 months while we were building. So this was not a good year. I didn't want to sleep with the intern. That was a joke. So this year.
This is community radio.
Yeah, okay, we're cool. But what I do to get the interns, I put it out there. Usually I get one from Moscow University down in Moscow. We go through the interview process and everything, try to find a good fit, not only with the fawn and the care. Usually it's somebody from the wildlife management degree program. So that's important, but also someone that can, you know, live at our house pretty much all summer.
An intern would work well for that, I would think. That makes sense.
It does. And we had a cabin, a small dry cabin. Now I have a little apartment in the barn. So anyone out there that's interested in applying this year, feel free. And it is an intern, no pay position. I do pay a stipend, $50 a week out of my pocket. So they can buy a few groceries and stuff. But
and a place to stay.
They get a place to stay. Yeah, absolutely. And this year, all you possible interns out there, there's an outdoor hot shower on the barn.
Woohoo!
So we're at about that time where we should take a short break here. And while everyone loves fawns, right?
Yes.
There is an opposing view to that. We're going to hear from Elmo and Patsy. Grandma got run over by a reindeer. And then we'll be right back.
And that was Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. If you're just joining us now, you are listening to the Tuesday morning KRFY morning show with myself, Julie Calamine, and Phil Huff. And joining us this morning is Dory McIsaac, the executive director of the Mystic Farm Rescue, and Kathleen Bradley, a member of the board also at Mystic Farm Rescue. And we've been talking about ungulate rescue, hearing the details of that, and we've got lots more to talk about. Dory began telling us about your new facility, but we haven't heard much about that. So why don't you tell us about that? Just how it works at the new facility.
Okay. Probably the most unexciting part of it for most people, but I think it's exciting.
Just a little. Give us a little rundown on your new facility.
Like I think I mentioned before, we like to call it the Taj Mahal of rescue sites. In the past, you know, there's been, you learn as you go with anything, and it's so nice because now we have it set up. I built a new barn, and you can go from the enclosures, the holding areas for maybe little ones that are injured or just so wee tiny just born that you don't want them out, you know, in the big run or whatever. So it's nice. I have all that, and then I have doors that open into the next step, you know, step two, which is another enclosure, and I kind of introduce them to each other, and they start, you know, eating browse and things like that. And then the final step, I have a, I don't even know how big. How big would you say that is?
It's huge.
It's huge. It's huge. Oh. That was a political joke.
Yes.
I use these, what's called noble panels. They're heavy, heavy duty, so they're bear-proof, and, you know, they'll outlive me a few times. They're heavy, heavy welded panels. And then I put electric wire around the top to keep, like, bears from going over the top or lions or whatever. And then the bottom, we try to put stuff so the coyotes can't.
So I know it's in bad taste to ask how many acres do you have. It's like asking the price of a home. But you must have a lot of acres or access to a lot of acres.
No, we have 20 acres. 20 acres. And,
do you have access to other lands nearby?
Yeah. It's actually, now I'm going to sound snobby, but it's gated. Gated in that the people that live out there, it's a private road. This is the new place.
And that leads me into a question about visitors.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. We all want to see the fawns and see what's going on, but I bet that doesn't happen every day.
It doesn't happen at all. And I feel bad about that. Again, just as I get so many calls every single day and all night about animals, I get calls from people that I want to bring my grandkids up and I can't do that. I just can't do it. And so I have to tell everyone no. At the old place, when, you know, now we're at the other place, we were on 20 acres there as well, but we were closer to town and we were surrounded by smaller, like five acreage type acres type lots. And it was more subdivision-y, if you will. And so we did get people that would just drive up. And some people, most people were really nice, and I'd say, I'm sorry, you know, it's not a petting zoo and whatever. Some people would get a little ornery. You know,
sure.
We the taxpayers, we pay your salary. I'm like, really?
not so much.
But
wildlife, that seems to be a common misconception.
You find that techie person you could install a live webcam.
Yeah, I would love to have one. That would you're talking to see people coming in. I'm talking to watch the
fawns. Then people could go to Facebook and I know. Watch a live feed. Yeah.
I know. I would love to do that. And so many people have asked about that, but I can't afford it.
Well, there's a plea to listeners out there. If anyone has that interest and time to volunteer, you can contact you.
Yeah, I can't even get the game cam to work. I mean,
you do need the techie intern. Say, Dory or Kathleen, I'm interested in you telling us about a typical rescue, just sort of what happens from beginning to end. I'm interested in how that works, and I think that listeners might be interested too, starting with when they shouldn't be picking up the animal, but then if it does happen, what happens? How does that all go?
You take the shouldn't pick it up.
As Dory had said earlier that, you know, if it hasn't been there for over 24 hours, don't pick it up. And her programs going into the schools are phenomenal about that because the kids actually go home and tell the parents exactly what they should or shouldn't do, which is nice. But when the call comes in, and Dory does take calls 24 hours, and there's times that she's calling and saying, okay, I have to head here, I have to do this, and once she picks the animal up and makes sure that it's all taken care of, then she does the feedings every 2 hours and making sure that they're getting the needs met that they have. And some are going to require quite a bit more time than others do. So she does a phenomenal job with that. And it is a long process from June, like she said, all the way until October before they're actually released. So she's got more of the technical side.
The first month is really intense. I mean, I've got a lot of, like we said, sometimes, you know, broken legs. And I do a lot of, you know, a lot of them come in really dehydrated. So we do sub-Q fluids. And this year I had one that she was such a challenge and so adorable. We don't know what happened. She was outside someone's house, and she had a broken, she was broken way up, just up in her shoulder is easier way to say it. And she was in traction, and I came up with this device, like a baby jump up, Johnny jump up for a baby that you hook on the door. I took one of those and attached a rug with four holes, and she'd hang in that and jump to strengthen her muscles, and you name it.
Do you have a video of that? I would like to watch that one.
I do. Actually, her picture's on our calendar this year, and those are available.
So how many, at any given time, how many animals do you have at the farm?
This year, I had 10 viable fawns that were...
over the whole season?
Well, I had more come in, of course. Some would come in dead or didn't, you know, couldn't make it, and I would take them to be euthanized. Like I said before, you know when to cut the losses, you know. But 10 viable babies that were released. Unfortunately, this year was a little different in that, see, I don't want to choke up here, but I released all of them, and about 3 weeks ago, we had a pack of coyotes take out five.
Oh,
right up on our property.
Right on the property.
Yeah. And normally, I mean, that could happen. I mean, you know that's going to happen, but you don't know about it, you know, and usually not right away like this.
I mean, how did they get around the defensive gate?
There's no defensive gate to our property, just to all the properties up there. But yeah, so that was pretty tragic. But the four that are left are still coming around. I see them regularly, and they're getting fat and healthy.
And it sounds like you don't have any that winter over.
Oh, they do. They don't in the barn or anything like that. They're not captive, but I see them. And it's weird. You know, people say, how do you know? When, well, it's like if you have, you know, quadruplets and your kids, you kind of get to know. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know that one is and that one is.
And any other species, any elk or moose that came your way and had to go on?
This year?
Yes.
No.
No.
Just the fawns this year. But we were talking when you asked about a typical rescue, and I was thinking if we have, I don't know how much time we have, but one, there's so many things, and people say, you know, how do you get them? You know, and it's like, oh, which 30, 50 stories do you want? But one that really jumps out at me, there's a, we got a call, and somebody said there's a little fawn up on top of a cliff. And I thought, oh, that's odd. So what happened was the fawn was born, dropped, hit the ground, and an eagle picked it up, tried to fly off with it, dropped it, and it was over just a ledge, a cliff on this farm. And the people that owned the farm could see the baby up there, and it wasn't moving. I mean, wasn't getting up. I mean, it was brand new born, but they knew it was alive. They could see its legs moving and stuff. And the mom was long gone. I mean, she couldn't get to it. Plus, the baby's injured, so she abandoned the baby for dead. Mm-hmm. Right. So we climbed up the cliff. We got this little baby, and he was, you know, dinged up a bit, but his major problem was his jaw was broken, and he was, you know, so I had to feed him with the eyedropper and stuff at first. But his other problem was his head was just full of the infected talon punctures. And we'd give him, well, first of all, his jaw, we got it so that eventually he did take a bottle. You know, he'd drink out of a cup from a dropper to a cup to a nipple. He was able to do it. But those talon wounds, they were infected until he was probably 4 months old. They'd go away completely and then come back. I mean, those, I never realized how nasty those talons are.
And may
but,
I ask,
but he how, was released.
Yeah, how did you really know for sure it was an eagle? Did they see the eagle?
They saw the eagle.
Oh my
yes.
word. Mm. That must have really been something.
Isn't so that crazy? That's a typical, you know, yeah. That's just one of the typical.
Right.
No two are the same.
Oh,
she
there's
can have
so
different
many.
Stories for every event.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I had one this year. I have to say this too. On the other side of the spectrum, when I talk about do not touch, do not, you know, don't be a fawn napper, I got a call. The lady said, I want to relinquish this fawn. I've been raising it. And anyway, a lot led up to it. Fishing game involved a little and stuff. And I finally went to get it. And they had been raising this fawn in their house. It had its own bedroom. its own toys and talk about imprinted, you know, and oh my gosh.
Was it ready for kindergarten yet?
Or was it was, yeah. They call, she says his, well, I shouldn't say the name because then they'll know who it is. But
yeah, don't.
I won't say it. I was going to say the name of the deer because they named him. But he's fine. He was released.
So when you release them, are they tagged or monitored? Or when they're gone, they're just, the kids are off out of the nest?
We used to down in Southeastern, when I was doing it down there, out of Pocatello area, Fish and Game would put the ear tag in them. But I finally just said, you know, this is so crazy, because within a couple days their ears are split because they catch those tags on branches and fences and whatever and just rip them out. So up here, Fish and Game agreed with me, and we don't tag them, and I can't afford to do like collars to follow them, and you know, they're just on their own.
So we're beginning to run a little short on time. Are there some other things you'd like to talk about, upcoming events or ways for folks to assist?
Kathleen,
absolutely. So we have our annual function this year, and we're going to be selling raffle tickets. They're $10 a piece. You'll be able to get them in various locations, and your support is always, always appreciated. But we have on the raffle ticket, we have gone from various items on the raffle ticket. We've brought it down to three items this year. We're going to have a half of a pork. Is that correct? Ooh. Quarter panel?
Half a hog,
excuse me. And it is cut and wrapped. And it is melt in your mouth, and I can never say this, Cinegray
Mangalista.
Wow. Which supposedly is like absolutely the best pork you could possibly get.
There are only, I think they told me, four people in the whole United States that do this breed of pork, and it's supposed to be just fabulous. Hmm.
Never heard of it. Sounds like a disease.
It's those curly, curly looking.
With that filth. That's delicious. That sounds excellent. And another item that we have on that raffle ticket is a Ruger LCP, and that's a 380 cal. And then we also have everything Star Wars, which is all sorts of fun stuff for the kids. So those tickets, and it has been an extremely popular event, and everybody loves to get the tickets because you have great
chances. And so how
can
somebody buy tickets?
Well, we'll be selling them in front of various locations, correct?
Yeah, we don't have that set up exactly, but you know, the normal Super One, I hope, and
Yokes,
and Fort, what do you call it, North 40. Mm-hmm. But you can also get them at
Bradley Insurance.
We'll have them at all times, and you can call me that 241-7081, and I will get those tickets to you or tell you where they are or something. And I want to tell everybody, too, if you buy the tickets, we do the drawing at the event, which is so much fun, you guys. You got to come.
And the date of the event is January 21st?
January 21st, mm-hmm. Yep. But you don't have to be there to win, but you're going to want to be there. It's fun.
And what happens? Is that a dinner? Is it a...
Good point. The people, there's a lot of places around town, all the pizza places. I can't say all, but, you know, throw some out there. Second Avenue Pizza and Domino's and pizza, they all donate pizzas, and then we do like a buck a slice or something, and then you buy your own beer and wine and pop. And
a buck a slice for the bucks.
It all goes to the funds.
Well, guys, we are starting to run short on time, and I want to thank you both, Doria McIsaac and Kathleen Bradley from the Mystic Farm Rescue, for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
If you want to do you want to give us your contact information one more time, and then we'll thank you and move on to current events?
Sure. You can go on Facebook, Facebook/ Mystic Farm Wildlife Rescue, and like our page. That's probably the best, or call 241-7081, or stop in Bradley Insurance. There's information in there, the Mystic Farm candles. It'll be resupplied soon with holiday candles. And those are for a minimum donation. You can get a candle, you can get a calendar.
Very good.
We love the fawns. We do what we have to do.
Well, I want to thank you again very much. And I guess the message today is leave those little animals alone.
Just leave the fawns alone. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
We're going to take this portion out with a little bit of Prince, When Doves Cry, and then we'll come back with some community calendar stuff. Prince, when doves cry. I thought he was saying when does cry, when doves cry.
Oh, that's why we picked that song. Well, it goes well either way.
You're listening to Community Supported Radio for North Idaho, 88.5 KRFY FM, the Tuesday morning show. It was a fun talk with the folks from Mystic River or Mystic Farms.
That's right. I enjoyed it, and I learned a lot about what to watch out for and what not to pick up out there in the woods. So good to know.
If you enjoyed the show, it'll be available as a podcast in another day or two. And as always, if you're traveling next week, we can be picked up live streaming at KRFY.org. The upcoming morning shows include tomorrow, Local Decision 2016. It's the Wednesday, October 26th version. So join morning show hosts Susie Perez and Chris Bessler. Invited guests for tomorrow are candidates for House 1 seat, Kate McAllister and Heather Scott. Tune in to hear their stand on important issues. That's at 8 o'clock on 88.5 KRFY. On Thursday, we have the Thursday edition morning show with host Jack Peterson. He always has some great guests. Next week, we have back to the Tuesday morning show with Julie and myself. And we're working on a couple of exciting potential candidates for guests. We're not sure yet who, Julie, right?
That's right. Stay tuned, but it'll be good as always. Yeah.
And then the final decision 2016 session is November 2nd. Next week, District 1 Senate candidates Sean Keogh and Steve Tanner will be giving their views.
Something to look forward to. Everyone should be listening to that. We are running a little short on time, but let's talk about some entertainment events, calendar news. And a good one to watch for is on the 27th. That'll be Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness. And it's Kinniksu or Kinnikinnik? Kinnik Native Plant Society. Phil, do you know which one?
Kinnikinnik Native Plant Society.
Thank you. Anyway, it's two events one night. Come and join the Friends of Scotchman's Peak for an evening of great beer and live music. That'll be at McDuff's Beer Hall at 220 Cedar. And then there'll be a special Blacktop Brown Ale debut. So look forward to that beer. There will be live music, and a portion of the proceeds will be going to the Friends of Scotchman Peak Wilderness. So look forward to that from 4 to 7. And again, that's on the 27th. One other item is on the 27th, Red Power Energy, the Idaho Myth Weaver, and Wild Idaho Rising Tide are hosting a screening of Red Power Energy. It's a new documentary film by Vision Maker Media and Rocky Mountain PBS. That'll be at 7 p.m. at the Panada. For more information, you can go to panada.org. And
I think we want to thank all of the listeners and others who gave during the online auction recently for KRFY. That's been closed out now, and I understand it was a huge success, Julie.
It was very successful. More details of that will be coming, but we did better than expected, which is always great with community radio.
And upcoming is Halloween. We'll see lots of goblins and goonies out, right?
That's right. And there's all kinds of Halloween upcoming events, but we may have to leave that for tomorrow's morning show, folks, to talk about.
Running a little short on time, the number one song in 1975, Julie?
You're going to have to tell me, Phil, but does it have to do with Art Garfunkel?
Art Garfunkel, I Only Have Eyes for You, and we'll leave you with that.
Have a great week.